You tell me. You're one of them.
If we were one of them, then why were they shooting at us? Why did they want us dead?
Everyone falls out with everyone else. People fight.
For no reason?
There are no reasons. Now cut out the talking and let's move it. I think we're in for another bad one, and I want to get back before it starts.
Truly, Doc believed that reason had deserted him this time, perhaps for good.
You realize that you are in that state that most people ascribe to me? The state of insanity, I mean.
But, Doctor, even with your record, I would have believed that you would be astounded in these post-Skydog times that the totality concept still operated, still clung to its meaning.
Meaning?
Doc whirled away from Wallace toward the glass partition that separated the Mobius from where they stood. He flung out an arm.
You really believe that has meaning?
He stood, not expecting an answer of any coherence, and not really listening, his eyes glued to the monstrosity that he couldn't truly comprehend. The slack-jawed moronic tech stood beside him, still tapping in the codes and keeping the mechanism ticking over. That had to surely be all that it could do. What else was there now? The military-industrial complex for which it was designed had long since crumbled to dust, and any answers it might come up with were for questions that were no longer asked. Doc pressed his face against the glass, breath misting and obscuring the image that seared on his retina. But not enough. No, never enough. Behind the glass lay the Rat King. At last he understood why Wallace and the hellish white-coat minds that had conceived the totality concept had used the term. In the middle of the sterile floor space stood a master computer. Its terminals were attached to a series of cables that snaked across the floor in six different directions. The screen attached to the mainframe was constantly filled with a series of 3D images and strings of words that Doc's eyes were unable to translate from blinking lights into coherent sentences. Although, looking at from where the images and words had surely to emanate, coherence was the last thing that occurred to Doc. For the six different directions terminated in six padded chairs. In each chair was something that had once been human, but was no longer. Six very old men, their clothes almost perfectly preserved in the sterile atmosphere, but hanging off them where they had become emaciated. They were fed and watered by a series of intravenous tubes that coiled away toward a central bank of a smaller mainframe, located in an antechamber of the room, presumably, Doc imagined, to try to cut down the amount of outside interference in the sterile room. The six once human men were blank-eyed and staring, their mouths fixed in rictus grins of what could have been agony or ecstasy, or some inhuman mix of the two. Muscle wastage made it hard to tell, as their faces were little more than skulls with papery skin clinging to them. Their wrists and hands were painfully thin as they poked from the end of immaculately laundered and starched sleeves. Two of the men wore Air Force uniforms, one an Army uniform, another the attire of a general in the Marines, and the last two were garbed in suits that were conservatively but tastefully cut in a pre-Skydark fashion. Doc recognized the style from some of the high-ranking security and government officials who had visited him during his brief sojourn in the late 20th century. The most horrific sight, however, wasn't their emaciated forms, but what had been done to their skulls above the brow. In his native Vermont, Doc had been familiar with the practice of trepanning, whereby a hole was drilled in the skull or some portion of the skull removed in order to relieve pressure on the brain. It was a medical practice of dubious worth, and was also used by some cultists and followers of ancient religions as a path to release the mind and induce euphoric states. Often it resulted merely in drooling idiocy, which was, Doc supposed, a euphoria of sorts. What had been done to these men looked like trepanning on a larger scale. The snaking cables that ran from the mainframe terminals ended in electrodes that were directly attached to portions of each man's brain. It appeared to Doc that the cables disappeared into a network of small holes drilled in the skull.
And this is what you have in store for me, is it, Jen?
Uh-huh. You see Secretary of Defense Sethna?
The Jen indicated a figure in a suit, whose only defining characteristic left was that he was of a darker skin than the others, possibly an Asiatic origin.
Yes.
Well, he's dead, basically.
Are not they all?
Depends on what you mean, Doctor. We try and keep them going, as it's the interaction of them all that makes the mechanism work. We recycle body parts, but in this one it just looks like the brain finally gave out. Now, there's no way we could find any part comparable to that until you arrived.
Madness. Sheer folly and madness. What are you... Oh!
Doc felt a needle plunge into his arm. He turned to face the drooling, cretinous tech, hypodermic still in hand, as the blackness and welcoming respite of unconsciousness overwhelmed him.
Oh!
The two-lane blacktop came to a sudden end, where the tarmac rose into the sky for a height of 20 feet, at an angle that suggested a sudden eruption from the earth had pushed it upward. The ground on either side was divided by a chasm that yawned to a width of 12 feet or so at its widest, narrowing to 3 or 4 feet in places. They came to a shambling halt.
End of the line?
Hell no. We just jump it. Say what? Maybe I'm just fitter than I look.
I'm not sure that I'm that fit.
Mildred peered over the edge of the chasm. It descended into a darkness that suggested no small depth.
It's okay by me, Missy. You fall down there and get chilled, it just means one less for the ritual. No skin off me.
Nice to know you care.
The giant, Todd, with the homemade blaster, gestured down the divide, swinging the giant pieces of metal as though they were weightless.
No way we're jumping here. If we go down a little, then it'll be easier.
Suits me. Lead the way, big man.
Much to her surprise, the giant did. Turning his back on them, he wandered along the edge of the chasm like a man leading a Sunday school outing. JB and Ryan both furrowed their brows, exchanging puzzled looks. Their captors were certainly a contrary mixture. On the one hand, they'd kept the group under a close guard with their blasters, yet they were seemingly slapdash about such elementary precautions as turning their backs on their prisoners. Like the sec men in the redoubt, they had spent too long in an enclosed atmosphere, one underground, one trapped by the valley and the freakish weather conditions, to have any conception of outside enemies and their tactics. Ryan surveyed the surrounding area. The storm had died down to a bluster at this point, the dust on the ground stirring in the small eddies and whirls of the wind. Denser clouds, obscuring parts of the valley, bespoke of areas where the storm still raged. There was no sign of life, and little cover. The trees were few and far between, stripped bare of life and standing starkly in the landscape. The earth was flat, if not originally this way, then it had been pared down by years of harsh storms scouring its surface.
How do people live in this?
They don't. They exist.
Isn't that what we all do?
Some maybe exist more than others.
The only reply was a shove in the back. The one-eyed warrior, acting on instinct, spun. Tilly stood in front of him, the tip of a long and wickedly jagged hunting knife touching the end of his nose.
Philosophy doesn't grow crops. Don't appease the gods. It does nothing but make you sit on your spreading ass all day doing jack shit. And it may get you cut up if you don't shut up and fall, Todd.
All right, you win.
The one-eyed man held up his hands and turned to follow the giant along the lip of the chasm. Dean and Christy fell into step, followed by Mildred and JB. Jack stayed back to last, dragging his heels and eyeing Mac with barely disguised hatred.
You don't say much, Whitey. Action, Feta. You ain't shown much.
Jack turned his back and followed his companions. It left Mac with a turning stomach and a foreboding that things weren't perhaps to be as simple as he had hoped. Farther down the way, Todd came to a halt. The giant waved the heavy blaster in the general direction of the gap between the two sides of Earth.
Guess this is about the narrowest stretch. It's no ravine at best, but this is as narrow as it gets.
What's to stop us going across first and then waiting to attack you on the other side?
This.
Todd took aim with his giant blaster at a small piece of scrub that was 20 yards across the gap. The blaster exploded with a deafening roar. It belched blue smoke and flame as it discharged a load of shot from the large barrel. The recoil from such a charge had to be enough to break an average man's arm if the blaster was held one-handed, as Todd held it. The giant didn't even seem to notice that the weapon had fired. 20 yards away, the scrub disappeared in a puff of what might have been dirt, but might simply have been the splintering wood of the bushes disintegrating as the mixed load of the charge hit it with tremendous force. The width of the barrel showed in the wide spread of the charge, which pockmarked the ground around the small scrub area. Some of the debris that made up the load could be discerned as pieces of metal glittering in the weak sunlight that filtered through the dust and chem clouds. Nails and shards of metal from other weapons, household objects from pre-dark times, anything that could be pared down to pieces small enough to load in the blaster.
Hot pipe.
Point made.
JB had deliberately asked the question in order to try to provoke such an action, casting an eye around the other captors and their homemade and home-repaired blasters. He made a rough mental assessment of their collective firepower.
Cool.
Todd grinned inanely through his broken teeth as he plucked another cartridge from one of the large pockets of his coat. He snapped open the large blaster, which operated on a simple hinge like a modified shotgun, and pushed the cartridge into the breech. It was a lumpy concoction of metal wrapped in bulging cardboard that shouldn't in all logic have worked. JB figured that one day the blaster would just explode in the giant's face.
Let's cut out the target practice and showing off and just move!
Lady, you've got a real problem. You're calling the shots here, so why don't you lay off? What is it with you?
Oh, shit. Bad question.
Do you want to know my problem?
Before Christy had a chance to move, Tilly had thrust her face into hers. Ryan stiffened, keeping his eye on the men with the blasters. Mildred shook her head almost imperceptibly. She, for one, would be interested to see what happened. Like J.B., she believed that all information was useful. It was just that sometimes she wanted different information.
You want to know what's the matter with me? You really want to see why I hate you and your kind?
My kind?
The insiders. You want to see what your kind has done to me? Just because I didn't fit what you wanted from your gene pool, not that it stopped your segment fucking me afterward like pigs.
Tilly began to unwrap the rags around her head. Her eyes burned brightly with hatred, and also with something that Christy felt sure was self-loathing. As the rags came away in her hand, a dirty and multicolored bandage that unraveled onto the earth, Christy could see that Tilly had no hair to speak of, just small tufts of down that appeared on a red, raw scalp. It looked as though someone had taken her by the hair and roughly sliced away the skin. Her forehead was heavily lined and crisscrossed by scars.
Damn.
Around her eyes, the skin was baggy, making her burning eyes seem ancient when fully revealed. Her face was scarred with the remains of old burns, her lips almost gone, and her nose hollow and devoid of flesh.
They set me on fire after taking my scalp. They wanted the hair and skin for DNA tests. The burns were for tests on antibiotics. When I was thrown out to die, the Sekhmen took me because they hadn't been allowed to mate and felt the urge.
Ryan kept his gaze steady on the woman, noticing that Christy didn't flinch. From the corner of his eye, Ryan could see that the other guards weren't moving. There seemed to be an unspoken assumption that Tilly, if not actually outranking them, was certainly of a higher standing. Ryan had been at the mercy of psychotics in charge of Sec forces many times. It was never a good experience.
Take a good look, bitch. Take a good look, 'cause you'll end up like this too. You and the black bitch.
Tilly don't like women much.
Of course she doesn't. We remind her too much of what she used to be.
Tilly whirled away from Christy, trailing rags like banners behind her in the now gentle breeze. With a few strides that seemed to float her across the surface of the ground without touching, Tilly was in front of Mildred, waving the knife in her face.
Shut the fuck up! Just shut the fuck up! Or I swear I won't wait until the ritual! I'll kill you now! And it won't be quick, it'll be slow and...
She was cut off as Mildred snaked out a hand and gripped Tilly's knife wrist. The ragged woman was taken by surprise, a blank look of incomprehension crossing what was left of her face as Mildred twisted her arm. With her free hand, she snatched the knife from the weakened grip, at the same time twisting farther so that Tilly had to turn or risk dislocation of her elbow or shoulder joint.
Hold it right there!
Mac raised his blaster. With an indication of his eyes, he made sure that the other two covered Dean, Christy, and Ryan, while he covered Jack, whom he trusted least. J.B. flicked his eyes toward the lip of the chasm. Todd had Mildred and Tilly in his sights, and a quick estimate told J.B. that the spray from the gigantic blaster would almost certainly chill him as well.
Okay, it's okay.
Mildred dropped the knife and pushed Tilly away from her so that the woman fell into the dirt.
I was just making a point. There's nowhere to run yet, anyway.
Tilly picked herself up, claimed her knife, and hastily rewrapped the bandages around her head until she was completely swathed. She stood back, a little apart from her fellow valley dwellers, her eyes flashing loathing from within the shadows.
I'd say we better get across real soon. There's a change in the air. We don't want to get caught out here when it happens.
Okay. You and Tilly get across and stand guard on the insiders as they come across.
Ryan watched with interest as both Tilly and Todd crossed the divide. The ragged woman was no surprise, bounding across the 3-yard gap in the chasm with a lightness of foot and a grace that landed her safely on the other side.